एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो। चलो ये कर लेते हैं, दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो।
हाय, आई एम अक्षय।
हाय, दिस इज सौरभ एंड यू आर लिसनिंग टू द फाउंडर थीसिस पॉडकास्ट। वी मीट सम ऑफ द मोस्ट सेलिब्रेटेड स्टार्टअप फाउंडर्स इन द कंट्री
एंड वी वांट टू लर्न हाउ टू बिल्ड अ यूनिकॉर्न।
Hi, my name is Raj Kundra. I am the founder CEO of JL Stream India Private Limited.
Imagine this. His father was a Punjabi migrant from Ludhiana who came to the UK and started as a bus conductor. After years of hard work, his father became a middle-class businessman in London. He grew up not wanting to join his father's business but to make his own name. And by the time he was just 22 years old, he had already earned his first million. Today, after running multiple businesses, he is now an entrepreneur in India and married to one of India's most loved actresses. Sounds like a plot of a Bollywood movie? It's actually not. This is the inspiring true story of Raj Kundra, a London-born Indian who actually came back to India for love and adventure. And the adventure that Raj is currently on is a venture called JL Stream that is attempting to disrupt social and video commerce. Here's Raj telling Akshay about his schooling years in the UK.
Funny enough, in my school from the age of 13 to 18, I was the only Indian in my year. There was a couple of black boys, I was the only brown Indian, and the rest were all British guys. So it was the odd off. A bit of racism here and there, but nothing that we couldn't tackle. And I think it's all about standing your ground. So if you came across as the pushover, then you're going to get pushed over. And I think that doesn't matter about your skin color. But yeah, I mean, there was racism, but it wasn't as bad as it probably was in my dad's time.
What kind of kid were you? Were you like a studious kid, or were you a hustler, street smart, or?
Yeah, I think I was a born hustler, to be honest. I remember failing my GCSEs the first time round.
What's GCSE?
GCSEs over here, I think it's 10th, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 10th standard. So I failed it the first time round. I did well in the basics, and then I failed on a lot of subjects, which doesn't allow you to go and do your plus, your 12th, your A-levels. So I remember my dad being really peeved, saying that, you know, I didn't educate myself, and I was hoping that you would do well. My sister was studious. She was the only one out of the three of us to get a degree. My youngest sister also sort of dropped out of school. I dropped out of college. I wanted to get into business and I wanted to be hardworking. And I said, like, Dad, you didn't go out there and study and get a degree, and you've been really hardworking. I want to put it, I want to put those skills to use.
Did he agree?
No, he wasn't really happy about it. He made me retake my GCSEs. When I retook it, I passed with flying colors. I concentrated better. And then when I went into A-levels, which was your 12th, then I dropped out after 12th, completed 12th and dropped out and said, you know what, I just can't do this education. I want to get into business. Funny enough, I always passed business studies, commerce, maths. I would always pass. But when it came to English, sciences, literature, I would fail those. So I just realized that maybe it's some genetic ability to understand numbers and understand business. I started business in school. I was selling at the age of 13. My dad would give me loads of pens that he would get from the post office free. So I was selling these pens to my school friends.
Wow.
That was, my first entrepreneurial journey. It was quite fun. I got the pen for free and sold it for whatever price it was that time.
Okay. So like what, 17, 18, you quit school to do business. So what was in your mind? Like, what did you want to do?
You know what? When I sort of dropped out, I was helping my dad in his. He had a cafeteria. It was a restaurant business that he had that time. So he was running that, and we'd have chefs and people. But there'd be times where the chef would sort of call in sick, so dad would take over cooking. There would be times when the waiters didn't come in, so dad would say, "Okay, take over," and I would be carrying these dishes of plates out to the table. So I was doing that, and then we were washing dishes, and then I think it sort of struck me. I said, you know what? I was not made to do this. I know that I'm not made to wash dishes for the rest of my life. I feel I'm here for a bigger purpose. So I told my dad, I said, Dad, this is just not for me. If dropping out of school or college means you're going to put me in a restaurant to wash dishes, I just feel that I'm not going to get anywhere in life. So can I have 6 months to prove myself? And if I don't succeed, you know what? I promise I'll come back and run the restaurant. He said, you have no choice. If you don't succeed, you will be coming back to run the restaurant. When Dad gave me this 6 months, I started researching and looking on the internet and seeing, you know, what people are buying, what people are selling, what industries are out there.
Which year was this?
Early 2000s. So that's when, I wasn't really getting much success in terms of what to do as a business. You know, if somebody just says, okay, give me 6 months, I'll do a business. But you got to know what to do, how to do, where to do.
Yeah, and especially at 18, I mean, you're clueless about the world.
Exactly. And there was a bit of ego there saying, Dad, you're self-made. I want to be self-made as well. So I didn't want to take anything from him. So I remember getting a job for 2 months in airline catering. So in the UK, the food that you get when you travel on flights, they come on trays, which are all plated up. So I worked in airline catering for 2 months. Working there got me my first credit card, because once you have a job, you can apply for a credit card. I remember it had a £2,000 limit, and that was like pretty good in those days. And then I basically just decided that I was going to fly off. I said, look, if I don't see business happening anywhere soon, I'm going to end up in a cafe washing dishes. Let me at least go and see the world a little bit. So I cut a ticket to Dubai first. I was always intrigued by Dubai. So it was one of the first places I traveled to. From Dubai, I took a flight to Kathmandu because a couple of friends told me they're going to be in Kathmandu. I had some friends in India. They said, we're going to Kathmandu. So I said, cool, I'm coming as well. Reached Kathmandu, spent some time there. It was a great holiday. And one day, whilst going through the bazaar, I realized, I said, you know what, I'm going to be heading back soon. I better put my mom a present, because she is my only saving grace and trump card. If Dad really pushes me to this restaurant, I might be able to buy some more time with my mom. I remember that, a little bit of muska with the mother always works. So I remember going to a local shopping street over there, and this guy selling pashmina shawls. So I asked him, what does it do? And then he pulled it through the ring and said, look how soft it is. It's fantastic. And he quoted a price. And I said, you know what? This is actually a really good product, especially for a country like the UK, which is always cold. So I started bragging. I said, do you have your own factory? He said, yes. I said, how many do you make? He said, we make about 25,000 shawls a month. I said, that's all? What if I need more? He said, yeah, no problem. We can arrange everything. So I'm paying my credit card for £2,000. Taking a sample in every color, taking a sample book. And I said, I'll be back. And within a month, I'll place my first order. But you better work on your quantities, because I'm sure I'm going to be buying out pretty much your production. I don't know why I said that and where that came from. But there must have been much in my tongue, because really it came true. But it wasn't so easy. I remember coming back from Nepal, and Dad was saying, so how's it going, son? I said, good. He said, you have 2 months left. I said, yeah, I know. Everything's under control. Those 2 months, I started calling various companies, and they would say, who are you? And I'd say, well, I'm Raj. And I set up a company called RK Collections that time. They'd say, Raj Kundra Collections. And they'd say, sorry, we've never heard of you. Is there a website? I'd say, no. What do you have? I said, I have a product. Okay, but we don't just buy off anyone off the street. There are hundreds who want to supply us. So I wasn't getting anywhere. None of these business houses.
So you were calling like Marks and Spencer's and...
Yeah, I called everyone. I called Marks and Spencer's. I called everyone, all the buying departments. No one took me serious. When you hear an 18-year-old on the other end of the phone, not that you really know his age.
Yeah.
So I realized I was running short on funds. There was ego. I didn't want to ask money from my dad. So I took up a part-time chauffeur job, because I'd passed my driving test. I was driving, and I was escorting various business people from their residence to the airports. One fine day, the head office of the chauffeur firm says that you've got to pick up from the house the head of Joseph, the buying agent for Joseph, and drop him to the airport. So I thought of this to be a fantastic opportunity. It was a destiny calls. So I literally put my brochure and my pashmina shawl samples in the back seat, hoping that he would see them and then start talking to me. Because we were told as chauffeurs, you cannot make conversation unless somebody speaks to you. So I picked him up from his house, got in the car, and lo and behold, he started picking the sample, looking at it, and saying, hey, what is this? It's interesting. I said, oh, so this is a pashmina shawl. My uncle has a factory in Nepal. So me, uncle, and I said, we produce them, and we're selling these everywhere. So he said, you know what? This is actually a fantastic product. Do you mind if I take a sample? And I said, please be my guest. Here's my visiting card. And by the time I dropped into the airport, he was literally, you know what? I'm back Sunday. Monday, come and meet. This is my card. Let's talk. I think this is a great product for the UK. So Joseph, a very big retail firm, was one of my first customers in the UK.
Joseph was like a clothing?
It's a clothing brand. It's a huge clothing brand. Even today, it's a huge clothing brand in the UK, a retail, high street retail designer brand. So Joseph was one of my first customers to buy Pashmina shawls. And, you know, the orders went into thousands. And month on month, they kept increasing. Finally, I was buying out the whole factory's production. I was one of the first people to import Pashmina shawls in the UK.
What was the economics of it like? Like, you know, how much did a shawl cost you?
My margins were 100%.
Wow.
It was just crazy. Yeah, I mean, I was picking up something at like $30, selling it at $60, and they were selling it out at $200, $300 each. But there was such a perceived value to a Pashmina shawl and the way it was. So the story really worked. And then having Joseph as a customer, it became much easier to sell to others. So I went to Belgium. I picked up a market there. I had a friend of mine who's a doctor. He helped me network and get a lot of orders in the Belgium high streets. I supplied a lot of diamond merchants and a lot of their families. We used to have various events that would happen where all the who's who's wives would just come together to pick up the latest collection of Pashminas that we had. So we became quite a sizable business. And made a lot of networks, a lot of contacts with people that I met. So networking was a big part of my business and growing up. But I just realized after 2 years of doing this business that every Tom, Dick and Harry started importing Pashminas from Nepal. They were cheap knockoffs. The margins went down from 100% down to 10%. And I just said, it's not worth it anymore. I've done it. I made my first few £100,000. I'm good enough to move on now. And Dad was happy. Dad said, well done, you know what, you're in the right time at the right place, just like me, I guess, and you've done well, so all the best to you. During my visit to Belgium is where I met the doctor, and he had a lot of contacts that he gave me. So one of them was a very interesting Russian businessman who basically took a liking to me because, you know, the way I dealt and everything, and he said, what are you investing in? What are you doing? And I said, well, I'm looking for the next big thing. He said, well, I'm into exploration and it pays really well.
What does he mean by exploration? Like oil and gas?
No, metals. He was into metal exploration. So in Chile, he was working in various countries. So I invested some money with him. I said, you know what? I would love to do something. I know nothing about it, but I've made some money and I'm happy to put it with you because When a billionaire comes to you and says, you know what, I'm doing something, it's interesting, I like you, it's like a blessing in disguise. So even the doctor said, you know what, you can't go wrong if the guy's offered you. It's a great thing. And lo and behold, I think a couple of his explorations that he was doing, and he found me so lucky because the money that I invested with him, and obviously he'd put in a lot of his money, but we struck copper in one of the biggest Chile mines, which he went on to then flip and sell and not sell himself. That returned me multiple fold money. I mean, it literally, my first $1 million I saw from that deal. And then after that, honestly speaking.
So what age were you when you became a millionaire?
I was one of the youngest millionaires in the UK. I was about 22.
Wow.
At 22, I wasn't a millionaire, but I had my first million. So yeah, that was nice.
How did that feel like? Like at the age of 22, you're probably worth more than everybody that you know, maybe worth more than your parents also.
Dad was really, really proud. But then I think I always tell people the same thing. I say, look, what is entrepreneurship? And it literally is living a few years of your life like most people won't, just so that you can lead the rest of your life like most people can't. So
that's a good saying. Is this your original saying? This is amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, it was something that I really followed. I said, you know, I'm going to work my butt off. My friends were partying. I was cabbing. School uni friends used to be out and weekends, and I was working, delivering people and all these shelves and working and this and that. I did lots of part-time jobs in between. So this was beautiful. It gave me enough padding because I realized that it was harder to earn the first 100,000, but to earn the next million was easier. So in life, you realize you just need that little bit of padding. If you get the entry, you get your foot in the door, then you know the next few steps are easy. It's just climbing, taking that first leap of faith. So then after that, I started investing in multiple businesses. And it's always been a trend of mine. I love startups. I love investing in people. I love investing in something that's new and interesting. I did film distribution. That's how my my touch with Bollywood happened. I took a few movies from Bollywood and distributed them in the UK. And this was at the time of Yuva released at that time. And there were other movies that released. So it was at that era. So distribute movies and that became my Bollywood connect. We grew up watching Bollywood films. So for us, we learned Hindi at home. We all spoke Punjabi and English, but we learned Hindi by watching Bollywood films. So yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I think, you know, what really worked for me was whatever I did with passion. And, if I failed in something or if I I used it to learn. My mistakes and my failures were my biggest teachers. And that just helped me. And I always tell a lot of people that don't repeat the same mistake because then you're just foolish. If you're learning from mistakes and you're stepping one step ahead, there is nothing better than failure. I just feel like if you're successful too fast and too soon, you're not going to appreciate where it's come from. And I just feel that failure is important. And honestly, I still fail. Even till today, I set up, I invest in companies, and I fail miserably. But it's never a repeat of the same mistake. I will, it'll be a new mistake that I've made, and it's been something, a new learning. So I think that's an important take home for budding entrepreneurs is do not, be disheartened by failure, but just keep working and building, your empire one step at a time and learn from your mistakes.
So are you more of a investor founder or a operator founder? You know, do you get hands-on?
I get very hands-on. You know, for me, I'm an operator, investor. Even if someone sort of says, can you invest in our company? I will not just put money. I will get hands-on. I'll want to learn about it. And Shilpa sometimes laughs. She goes, you invest in businesses which you know nothing about. I said, when I sign the dotted line, I know everything about that business. I could get offered businesses that I know nothing about. But by the time I come to signing the dotted line, I've become self-taught and I feel like I've become a PhD in that. So I will not invest in the business till I've learned about it, even if I don't know anything about it, because I just feel that you weren't born to know everything and anything. So if there's something interesting, you need to learn it. And I think when you learn it, if it interests you and intrigues you, then, you dive into it.
If you like to hear stories of founders, then we have tons of great stories from entrepreneurs who have built billion-dollar businesses. Just search for the Founder Thesis podcast on any audio streaming app like Spotify, Gaana, Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to the show.
So what are the businesses that work for you? And
businesses that worked for me... across the path, obviously, the Pashmina business was great. I'd invested into diamonds. We bought and sold precious diamonds from Antwerp to Dubai. Again, it was just the connections. Everything led to something else. When my Pashmina business happened, I met the Russian who helped me with the exploration investment. That paid back well. I used that money to buy diamonds from Antwerp, from the best diamond merchants. And I had a lot of Indian friends there. And their wives I used to supply shawls to, so they introduced me to the husband. And I used to export those to Dubai and sell them there to large jewelry companies that would then use them for bigger pieces. So the jewelry business, that was good. The film business was tricky. You'd have a good film one weekend and the next weekend you'd have a dud and it didn't do well. So you'd lose money there. But I think I did that more from passion of just enjoying Bollywood movies. If I look back in the last recent sort of 7 to 10 years, I think one of my biggest failures was a company called Best Deal TV. We set up a home shopping channel in which Akshay Kumar, myself, and a couple of investors came together. I was trying to recreate QVC, what QVC had done in America. It was so popular even today, but for some reason, home shopping in India just is so taboo. It's all about Get Slim tablets, Hanuman Chalisa products. They never took it seriously, and everyone, I think, in America, QVC came first, then online shopping, whereas in India, online shopping really took over fast and home shopping was not really considered cool. So the expenses were just so high to run that business that I think collectively, all us investors, we lost about 100 crores in that company and it just went down. We had to close it. And I know with Shilpa, she always gets very passionate about a business. And for her, when you set up something, closing is not an option. And I always tell her, you cannot do this. If you want to get into business, you need to know when an elephant is falling off the cliff and when you cannot hold it by the tail, otherwise you're going to go down with it. So I think knowing when to cut your losses is a very important factor. It's very difficult. There's a lot of ego play that happens, but you can't keep throwing good money at a bad product.
What were you selling on Best Deal TV? Like what kind of products?
Anything from forks to kitchen products to everything. I mean, anything that was innovative. So home shopping was all about saving time and innovation. So cutting vegetables faster, a pillow that helps you sleep better. There were a lot of research products. We traveled a lot to the international fairs. We used to buy a lot from China. We used to make a lot of stuff in India. So there was a lot of innovation going on. But you would only sell to the number of customers watching you on that channel, unlike e-commerce where Amazon, you know, you go to it to buy what you want to buy. So ours was more invitational viewing. And I guess, I don't know, it just didn't connect. And unfortunately, the time the business went down was when demonetization happened. Our business just went down overnight. You know, we were doing 10, 20 lakhs a day of revenue, and it went down to like 50,000 a day. So it just became unsustainable, and we had to pull the plug on it. So that was one of my biggest failures ever, to be honest, in all my years of business. But other than that, I think, investments we made, we either broke even or we exited at a decent return. I enjoy it. I mean, today, I've now invested and set it up myself after the Chinese app ban happened in a streaming company. I feel, and I actually feel this with every company I invest in, that's going to be one of my best deals ever. But genuinely, the streaming business is huge. There's a huge FOMO behind it, a fear of missing out. And we're creating a whole ecosystem of live streaming. So you're going to have matchmaking, you're going to have live one-to-one video chats with people. And especially lockdown, you know, today you can't date, you can't meet someone, you can't connect with someone. We provide you that platform where you can connect with people. We keep a very safe environment where if someone's just being rude or something's just not working for you as a streamer or a user, you can kick that person out. And we sort of empower the women in that.
Yeah, help me understand, like, what is a comparable app?
So the biggest and the app that was doing close to 1500 plus crores a year was an app called Bigo Live. So Bigo was very big in India. So everyone heard of TikTok, not many heard of Bigo. Both Chinese apps went down during the Chinese app ban. TikTok was running on advertising revenue. Bigo was running on customer spending, sending gifts to people they liked. So today when you go on TL stream, you see a streamer, you might like that person. So you start chatting with them. How are you doing? Good. And then you send a virtual gift. So you do an in-app purchase, you buy a rose, and you send it to her to impress her. Thank you for the rose. You get a live shout out. You get happy that you're 1 minute of fame. People start connecting. Then you can send direct messages and connect with that person, have offline chats with them through the app.
So is this like a clean version of OnlyFans?
Yeah, I wouldn't like to compare it to OnlyFans. OnlyFans has a lot of content on it. OnlyFans has a lot of content on it. We don't do any content. Ours is only live streaming. When the live streaming is over, that's it. It's gone. But yes, I mean, OnlyFans has done well, but it's only done well because of the sex and all the pornography. So we didn't want to get into that space at all. Our live streaming, there's so many community guidelines. If anyone violates it, we turn them off. A lot of apps in the market, live streaming apps that are selling on sex. And we send our complaints, regular complaints, to the MEITY, Ministry of Communication, and they do a good job of taking them down. So I think where we're using that first mover advantage in India since the app ban has happened, and we're seeing good growth. We only launched in January. It's doing about $100,000 a month of revenue from month one till now.
So is it a platform basically for people who already have a following, like a platform for influencers to leverage their following and through live stream?
So Gen Z, new people, the people that were on TikTok and they were new influencers that want to sort of reach out to their fans. Yes, if you set up an account and you put it on your social media that I'm now on JL Stream, come and chat with me, it helps. But it's not a prerequisite. Today, if you're just a good-looking person, a nice-looking guy, nice-looking girl, and you want to chat with someone, you will have a lot of our traffic that's on our platform that will come and see what you have to say. And we have a lot of scheduled lives. So I bring on a lot of Bollywood celebrities. I bring on a lot of singers that come and make the evenings very interesting. And the fact that these users get live shout outs from sending gifts really works. People like that. The app, the ecosystem that I'm creating on this app, my roadmap is down the line, these influencers will have a system where they'll be able to sell any product they want to also through the app live, with cash out happening without coming off my stream. So I can advertise a product, I'm live streaming. So a little bit of what I learned in home shopping will actually come in here. And I can cash out, check out, buy the product, it gets delivered to me without coming off the live stream. So I plan on preparing that towards the year end. But before that, we're in talks with two of the largest dating companies in the world that want to enter India. They bring to the table technology enhancements, 70 million user base plus. So that's really going to help us, and that strategic investment is going to help our app go global, because whilst it was made in India, it's deployed worldwide. We have users from across the world that are earning revenue. Today in India, we have 1,000 plus streamers making more than a lakh a month. So it's good. You know, the revenue is really picking up fast for a lot of these streamers.
And how does the discovery happen? Like, say, you know, I'm a new user, first time I log on, you know, how do I discover what's happening, what's of my interest and stuff like that?
It's there. The minute you log in, you'll see a discovery page where there are lots of people streaming. You can swipe up, you can put a search. You can say, I want to search for people that are interested in yoga. You can fill up a match form, which basically says, I'm a guy looking for a girl, this age group, these interests. And then it'll pop up all the people that are live, and then you can directly have a one-to-one video chat with them live.
Okay. So it's like one-to-one and one-to-many, both yes. options are there. Okay.
So this for me is one of my newest and exciting ventures. I'm wearing the CEO hat. I set up this company. We've got a team of about 40 people working under me. And this is what I'm looking at taking to the next level. And in between, we have our F&B business that Shilpa and I invested into, Bastion Hospitality, one of the most popular celebrity restaurants in Bombay.
Okay. So on JL stream only, what kind of users, and what are the numbers like? Like, you know, how many users are, like, you know, that monthly active user number?
Yeah. So from Jan till now, April, in 4 months, we had 500,000 downloads. We have about 7,000 to 8,000 daily active users and 150,000 monthly active users. So it's still small, but based on that, to be doing more revenue than any of these new short video platform apps are doing, who have 20, 30 million users. So with just that 100,000 user base, we're already doing $100,000 a month.
Wow. And what percentage do you keep? Like, you know, when somebody...
We do 50-50 with the streamer.
Okay. And how will you do the e-commerce bit? Will you like tie up with an existing e-commerce player, or will you build the whole stack?
No, we'll tie up. So for example, if a brand comes to us and says, okay, I'm a makeup brand, can you get one of your influencers to sell? We're going to give you inventory of, we have 5,000, just up to 5,000. So we put that in our system. All the orders go directly. We take a commission. And we give the streamer a commission. And so the streamer makes money, we make money, and the user gets to sell his product using one of our hundreds of influencers that we have. So they get a choice of influencers. And then you can sell live video. Live video streaming sales is the biggest business in China. And I know that it's going to fall down into India as well, where people say, you know what, I trust my influencer. I'll buy it if he tells me to.
Okay. So your competitors here would be companies like, say, Meesho, which is also, in a way, helping influencers to sell. And there's Bulbul. Bulbul is, again, video-based.
They're basically pre-recorded videos that you can buy what they're wearing and what they have.
Yes. They're pre-recorded, yes.
We plan to get into pure live streaming. FOMO, once it's gone, it's gone. You start connecting with your favorite streamers, know that they sell some of the best products, know that they only come with a limited inventory, and knowing that you're having a special offer if you buy through them. So there'll be a lot of offers that we'll be able to negotiate and create, because we know that our buying power, that in a live stream, we'll be able to sell 5,000-10,000 pieces, for example.
Okay. Got it. Okay, cool. And like, you know, what is, I mean, the name Jaldi is like a India-specific name, and you have plans to go global. So how will that happen?
Yeah, so that's why it's JL Stream for the international market, and we have two handles, JL Stream for the global market and Jaldi Live for India. The JL stands for Jaldi Live, but we know that Jaldi is a word. It's very difficult to pronounce for a foreigner. So they all call it JL Stream. We have all the handles, JL Stream and Jaldi Live.
But are you like looking at specific countries that you launch first, or you'll let the market dictate, like wherever you get more downloads, you know, like
we started with India. That was the lowest hanging fruit, and a few of the celebrities posted for us because they have, you know, the whole NRI Indian diaspora worldwide. So we had people from Australia logging in, from Africa, from everywhere where there's Indian NRIs, America, Canada, everywhere. We have a lot of users from all over the world that are sending gifts, and a lot of streamers from around the world that are just logging in, because anyone, you and me, can just log in, sign up, start streaming, and people can start sending us money and we can make revenue. So we have a payout partner that allows us to pay out in over 100 countries. So wherever you make your money from, you can cash out in that country instantly.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Okay. So, you know, from what I understand, the biggest asset which you have is relationships and network, which has helped you build your businesses throughout, you know, right from the age of 18 till today. So, you know, what's your advice to people like me? For example, I'm a little bit of an introvert. You know, I hesitate to go out, put myself out there, you know, build a network. So, you know, what's your advice to people like me?
Honestly, I really do feel that networking is important. I follow Gary Vee, who's a really interesting entrepreneur. And I love his videos, and his inspiration is great. And he's all about networking. He teaches us that if we network, half our battles won. And I'm living proof that had I not networked the way I did, I don't think I'd be where I am today. So it's very, very important to get out there and to put that foot forward. If you know, being introvert is fine when you're at a home or with people, and then you're trying to get comfortable with someone. But when it comes to business, if you have a passion, you have to bite the bait and just go after, you know, making your dreams and your goals come true.
How do you network? Like, do you just cold call people, or do you just walk up to someone and say, "Hi, I'm Raj"?
Yeah, I mean, I've done it. I've done it all. It depends. I started with cold calling to try and sell a Pashmina shawl, right up to introducing someone in the car by, you know, him starting conversation saying, "Hey, I like the Pashmina shawl," and then that was it. My entry happened. So you've got to know which piece to play. You've got to play. Business is like chess. If you play the right move, then you're going to get the right invite, and then you're going to make the right move in that, at that place. So it's very, very important that you create the environment that you need around you so that you know, you can make the business happen the way you want it to happen. Otherwise, sitting quiet, watching someone from afar, being a shy fan, it's not going to get you anywhere. You know, it is what it is.
Were you a fan of Shilpa before you, like...
Was I a fan? I always tease. I say, I grew up watching your movies. She started in the industry very young. She always gets me for that. She goes, "I'm not that old." We're the same age. But yeah, so I love Bollywood, and that's why I got into Bollywood distribution as one of my businesses when I was younger. Yeah, so I saw her work. I saw some of her movies. And she just became huge in the UK when she did that Big Brother stint. I think that's where we met, and that's how we got into it.
She was in Big Brother in UK, is it?
In the UK, that's right. The Celebrity Big Brother.
Okay. And so, you know, if you build one conversation with somebody, say through cold call, or you're dropping them to the airport, how does that one conversation lead into a relationship building?
It all depends how that conversation goes. I mean, if that some conversations just become a headache, and you realize that, okay, you started the wrong conversation with the wrong person. But you know, if the person is interested in what you have, and you're interested, and you've got the right product to offer the guy, then it's just follow up. I mean, you've taken a card, you've got to make that follow up email. You've got to exchange the pleasantries. And if you have a business card, the best thing is to drop the email to the customer that, you know, we had this conversation a few days ago. Do we take it forward? Did you like it? How was it? Hope everything's well. And I think it's important to become friends with the people that you're working with, so that you build a connect, which is a bit more than just a cold cut business working relationship. Because in a cold cut business relationship, it's very easy to get denied. But when you create a little bond with someone, suddenly it's that. I've seen it work a lot better. When you create that little bond with someone, it goes a long way. So if you ask someone about their family, their son, drop a small gift for their baby, you realize if you touch the right chords and the right pulse, that's it. It's you know, if you've touched the right chord with someone, it's much more easier to have a better relationship. And it's all about relationships. And honestly, I'm not a user-friendly person. For me, I will treat everyone, be it the boy cleaning dishes to you know, the richest man in the world, the same. And some people say that, but I was born and brought up in the UK where there was no such thing as house help. We did everything ourselves. We worked ourselves. We washed our own dishes, cleaned up after ourselves. So the way we were brought up was far different to the way people in India are brought up. Honestly, I find them a lot more spoiled. A middle-class Indian and a middle-class UK citizen, you'd find the Indian much more spoiled than the British guy, because it is what it is. You know, they've got too much availability and cheap labor, access to cheap labor. So for me, it's about how you treat someone, and how you treat them when no one's watching is also very important.
Okay, so my last question to you, what would you like to be remembered as? You know, what would you like your legacy to be?
Wow, never been asked that one. You know, I think it's really, really important to, when I look at what I would like to leave, if something happens to me tomorrow, what do I leave behind for my family and for people around me? I think it's just got to be the fact that that person was a great, nice person, nice to talk to, pleasant. His motives were genuine, he was just helpful. And I try and do that. I mean, I'm taking up a lot of work with Shilpa's Foundation. I do as much as I can. I've turned vegan. I'm doing my bit towards the community and helping people. So I'm not one of those guys that's there making money, living the life. I don't drink alcohol. I don't eat meat. So for me, I'm very spiritual, and then it's a path that I've followed now. So I just want people to remember that this guy was a good guy, and you know, I want to leave a footprint to where people can say, it's actually pretty good what he did. You know, he wakes up at 5 a.m. He leads a healthy life, worked out regularly. He was always available. He was one phone call away. And he didn't treat people like shit. And I think that's really important. You've got to really treat people in the right way. I've been to a lot of celebrity, high influencer, big business people's parties where because you didn't cut, you didn't make the cut, you know, they were sort of, they'd just walk past you or just look through you. And I just find that so fake. You know, it's like, learn to treat people like people, guys. You know, there you have it, tomorrow you don't. And I've seen a lot of highs and lows. In my last 10 years of living in India, I've seen billionaires come and billionaires go. So I think if someone's been good to you, you'll remember that always. But if someone's just been an ass, it's like, you know, you got, this is karma paying you back.
Mm-hmm. Who are your heroes? Sorry, I said that's the last question, but I couldn't resist.
My father was one of my biggest heroes, because really self-made, you know, from zero to hero. He showed me that it can be done. So we used to watch him do everything, literally everything himself. And him and my mother, both, they really are self-made. If I look in the business field, I love Richard Branson and the way he works. Elon Musk is the kind of guy that I think is pretty cool because of the way he is. He's also very, you know, this is it. It's in your face. And he came up the hard way as well. People that are self-made, I have a lot more respect for self-made people than someone that just got it on a platter and then you know, tries to live up the life that way. Would advise people to not just sort of, you know, shut shop on India and think, oh, it's difficult. It's politically driven and it's, you know, and a lot of rules and regulations. If you cut through the red tapism, there is no better place to do business than anywhere in the world than India.
Do check out the very cool JL Stream app on Play Store or App Store to experience the next generation video-led social network.
If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.